Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. Welcome to the Get Better Wellness Radio Show. Today is April 16th, and I'm your host, Erin Chamberlick, the Real Food Revivalist, coming to you live from Chicago, Illinois. On this show, we talk about real food for real life and help you understand what the standard American diet is doing to your health. You can visit my website at getbetterwellness.com to read more articles and sign up for my newsletter. So today we are talking about real food nutrition for a healthy pregnancy. So I needed to get somebody to help me explore this topic. So for me, the first time I really was interested in eating nutritious food was about 21 years ago when I was expecting my first child. And unfortunately, I followed the standard advice being dispensed for nutrition, and now I see that I didn't eat as well as I thought I was. I didn't feed my babies right, and now I have to fix everything. So if you hear somebody on the line with me, I would like to introduce Anna Durhock. Welcome, Anna.
Thank you, Erin. It's great to be here.
Anna is from Minnesota, and she has earned a degree in dietetics and has her master's degree in nutrition from University of Bridgeport in Connecticut. And she is now located in Minnesota and a licensed nutritionist through the Minnesota Board of Dietetics and Nutrition. And she is on staff with Darlene Kvist, who I interviewed earlier. And their company is called Nutritional Weight and Wellness. Now, you're based out of, what, the St. Paul office, is that correct?
I used to. Now I work in Maple Grove.
Okay, great.
Yeah, so I live there.
Well, you know, there's some good. Yeah, that's what we want to be, close to the house.
That's right.
So I know that, you know, everybody is aware that there's no better time to pay attention to our nutrition than, you know, preconception and pregnancy. But we need the right information. So that's why I wanted to explore this topic with you. You know, besides being at Nutritional Weight and Wellness, I just want to mention that you can listen to Anna and other nutritionists, along with Darlene Kvist, on iTunes through their Dishing Up Nutrition radio show. And the website where you can find all of this is nutritionalweightandwellness.com, all spelled out. So, Anna, tell us about your family and how you ended up pursuing the field of nutrition so we have a better understanding about you.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I was fairly young when I got married. I was still actually in college, and I thought, before I came to Nutritional Weight and Wellness, I thought I knew pretty much all there was to know about nutrition, and I was totally wrong. And so when I started working with Dar, my whole world changed, and just how I looked at food, and which was a good thing, because when I started my master's program, I got pregnant with my first daughter, and so I know she would have had quite a few, you know, weird things and complications if I hadn't started eating better, because I had a terrible diet. I was eating, you know, lots of cereal, heavy grains in my diet, very small amounts of protein. So I know I probably would have had, you know, a lot of weight gain with my pregnancy, and she probably would have had quite a few issues, probably several sugar cravings as a child. So that's kind of how I got started with, you know, just eating more healthy. And I had quite a few hormonal problems already when I started working for DAR. Mm-hmm. And so in order for me to have a healthy pregnancy, I made sure I really cleaned up my diet. I had been on birth control for a few years, so I started taking a little progesterone cream because I was worried that the estrogen from the birth control was going to affect, you know, a miscarriage or something like that. So there was several things I did in a short period of time to make sure my body was healthy for this baby. But that's really how I got started. And now my oldest is almost seven. She'll be seven in June, and I have two other children. Genevieve will be five, and Luke is almost three. So,
wow.
Genevieve is five, but Luke is almost three, yeah. So,
Okay.
Yeah, so, I mean,
so still a busy household with three,
yes,
five, and
yes,
almost seven.
Yep. So, so I mean, but the biggest thing for me was learning how important healthy fats were. I definitely was eating the wrong fats, and you know what they are. They're, you know, it's the, I can't believe it's not butter, and you know, because we thought that was better for us. It didn't have cholesterol, and I think that's a lot of people's problem today, Erin, is that we are so like fat deficient that that's why all these infertility problems are going on.
I agree.
You know, because the body needs fat to support life and everything else. So, yeah.
Well, you know what? Since you mentioned fats, why don't we start there? Because this is probably one of the biggest things that we are told wrong. You know,
yeah,
if you look on any of the standard, you know, websites, the government, it's going to tell you if you're pregnant, you should eat lots of low fat, this and that. And that's just wrong. And you and I appreciate that there's no science that backs up what they're saying, and there's plenty of science that backs up the fact that we need to eat fat. So what are the healthy fats again? Why don't you just list some of them, and let's talk a little bit more about why we need them, not just pregnant women, but all of us need them.
Okay, so the healthy fats that me and Erin both agree are awesome are going to be the butter, hopefully grass-fed if you can find it, olive oil, extra virgin avocados, extra virgin coconut oil, olives, the raw nuts and seeds. There's so many. But those are like the main core ones that you're going to want to use every day. And they just support pretty much everything because every cell membrane is actually made from fat. And so that's what gives our cells, you know, the integrity, the strength. It keeps things that should be in the cell in and keeps viruses and cancer out of the cell. So, I mean, it's what you need for a healthy functioning metabolism, a healthy brain, which is another story with pregnancy and but, you know, and for the fetus as well. So that's like those are the main purposes of fat. And plus it gives us a feeling of fullness so that we're not eating a bunch of junk like candy and crackers and cookies and things like that. So it's all those things that's why we need those healthy fats.
Right. So you mentioned, you know, the fat fats that, what are you recommending people eat in terms of quantity of fat? Because we said, yes, eat olive oil, butter, coconut oil, and they're probably going to put this little dot on there, and that's not what we're after.
That's right, especially if we're pregnant, and especially if, you know, you have been, you know, kind of following, like you said, a standard American diet where it's, you know, really low fat. I would say at least a tablespoon per meal. You know, if it's going to be butter, put a tablespoon on, you know, your vegetables, or a good tablespoon of coconut oil when you're frying your eggs with some kale, you know, something like that's a good standard to go by. And you could even go up to two tablespoons depending on, you know, craving levels and blood sugar issues, things like that. So, but usually a tablespoon's good.
Okay, good.
Or half
a lot of people are happy now. Because they thought they couldn't eat butter, and people always apologize to me, like, I'm trying to get the butter out. I'm like, oh, no, we're putting the butter back in. And you said grass-fed butter. I don't know if they have this by you, but around here in the Chicago area, we can get Kerrygold butter, which is grass-fed Irish cows.
Oh,
I don't
yes.
know why we can't get
I've seen that, yes.
But, yeah, we do have it even in our Walmart, Trader Joe's, Costco, and so that is accessible to everybody around here anyway, and you can always order it online, whatever you want. It's always available online if you live in some, you know, remote location of the world.
Right.
So talk about the other places we get healthy fats, the other animal foods and things like that.
Yeah, so you can get, and if you find grass-fed beef, that's another great source of healthy fats, especially high in omega-3s. The DHA found in free-range organic egg yolks. There's several forms. Like, even if you use a good almond butter on an apple, I mean, that's a really healthy form of fat. which can be used in several different ways. Sometimes I put it in smoothies. Sometimes I make these things called almond oatmeal balls, which are phenomenal as well, and it kind of satisfies a sweet tooth every once in a while. So, and then any type of fish, especially the fatty fish, though, like the salmon and mackerel, things like that, that have that rich omega-3 fatty acid in them. So, what else? Avocados. I love avocados. I encourage my clients to eat at least one a day.
And how are they eating them? Are they just peeling it and chomping down, or do you have ways? Because there's some people who just think they don't like it, which I can't imagine.
Yeah, some people really don't like the taste, and so usually if they don't like the taste, I have them add like some salsa and kind of mash it, almost like, you know, guacamole, and they tend to really like that. If they do and they'll eat it plain, usually I'll have them throw it on a salad or just sprinkle it with a little bit of sea salt and balsamic vinegar. I mean, several ways. Sometimes I have them cut it up in slices and put it in like a turkey roll-up, like with some, you know, organic nitrate-free deli meat. So, I mean, those are just several ways. Sometimes if people aren't real sensitive to bananas, if they don't have really high triglycerides or, you know, they don't have real sensitive blood sugars, I'll have them make a green pudding with it. Have you ever heard of that, Erin? So you just, you know.
Yeah. Not with a banana, but with, you know, avocado and even. Yep.
Yeah. So usually we just take like a small half of banana and then we do a half of avocado and you just mash it up and it actually is really, really tasty. So, I mean, those are things that I do. So.
And there's chocolate pudding you can make with an avocado and, you know, a little bit of coconut milk and stevia to sweeten it up a bit. And 100%, you know, raw cocoa powder.
Raw cocoa powder.
That's pretty phenomenal. Yes. Because
yes,
people have chocolate cravings.
Yes. And it's satisfying because it's got all that good fat in it. So, you're not going to want to eat, you know, everything else in sight. So.
Right. Tell me what kind of you mentioned DHA and egg yolks. And where else are you recommending people get DHA from?
Usually, because there's not a whole ton of it in our food supply, I have any pregnant woman or nursing woman take DHA, like a DHA supplement, and it's usually from algae. So it's an algae-based source because you're going to get the most amount of DHA from an algae-based DHA. Fish oil does have good amounts of DHA, but it kind of sometimes competes with the EPA in it. So we like to put pregnant women on the algae source of DHA. I mean, there's other ways.
How much?
Usually 400 to 600 milligrams per day. So that can be anywhere from 2 to 3 capsules or gel caps. So, but usually if they're willing to eat 2 eggs a day, I usually put them on 2 because then they're getting 100 milligrams each in 1 egg yolk. So,
good to know.
Yeah.
But the DHA, it's good for the brain. And
yes.
Is that the eyes too?
Yes. Yep. You're right. It's the retinal health of the eye. Yeah. So it's very, very important for brain development, specifically in the fetal stage and also in the first 3 or 4 years of life. Very, very important. Any child that comes in that's not on DHA, I put them on DHA, and my kids have been taking it since they were infants. So, so it's very, very important for brain development, for focus, for any type of language skills and things like that. So, but also for eye health, it's the most concentrated in the brain and the retina. So it's very, very important for that as well. But it also they're finding with just, you know, people who aren't pregnant or nursing, they're finding that DHA can be more powerful than even the EPA and fish oil at preventing heart disease and, like, inflammation of the blood vessels. So that's another
thing. Let me ask you, since you've given it to your babies and every child that comes across your path, give me a brand, because obviously it's some sort of drops then that you're using with the babies, right?
Yeah, the babies, okay. I have it out there on the shelf.
Okay.
but it's a drop, and I can email it to you too, and you could list it on one of your next podcasts. Sorry.
Yeah, I can put it on the show notes for this page too. But
okay.
It's probably something, you know, people can find. Maybe even, I don't know if Carlson carries something like that, because I know they have vitamin D drops. So, but that'd be something. That's something I wasn't really thinking about, giving it, you know, like you said, the first 3 to 4 years of life.
Mm-hmm.
They're still developing. But then we need it too, because we want our brains to be sharp. So who doesn't
right.
need it, right?
Yeah, I took 4 this morning.
Okay. Well,
sure
I get mine from I get mine from cod liver oil. So you're saying you've got some probably study in the back of your mind where it's more powerful than EPA for the brain, and it sometimes competes in fish oil EPA. Is that what you're finding? Is that why you're doing that?
Yeah, and that's why I usually try to do the algae-based form. And fish oil is great, and you still will use some of the DHA, but it's just not as powerful. So we sell one that's our own brand, and it's very, very high quality. And it's just our NutriKey brand.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's another one I found, and this is the one that my kids like, because they don't like the DHA because they actually bite into it. So,
okay.
Nordic Naturals has a really good strawberry essence DHA, and that's the one that my kids like, so I get that one.
Yeah, and that's a really good brand too.
Yes, they do, and they it's not a children's one. I actually just get the regular one for adults. And it's
mm-hmm.
got more DHA in each capsule, and that's why I like it. So.
Okay.
But.
And then, do you know anything about fermented cod liver oil, like Green Pastures fermented cod liver oil? Do you do much of that?
I know a little bit about it from Sally Fallon and Nourishing Traditions. I know it's a higher quality, and it doesn't. It has a better balance of vitamin A and vitamin D in it.
Because
sometimes, you know, they're super, super high in vitamin A and very low in vitamin D. So I know it's definitely a higher quality product. So if you can find fermented cod liver oil, which you usually can, whether you go online
mm-hmm.
or if you go to a good, you know, co-op or Whole Foods store, you're going to find that. But that would definitely be something that I would recommend over just a regular cod liver oil.
Yeah. And I've used it once, and then I ran out and didn't get it again, so I'm back to, you know, something else. But
right, so right
it is, you know, it's lacto-fermented, so that, you know, really helps the vitamin A, you know, be more easily absorbed. And you require less of it. So although it seems more expensive, you know, ounce for ounce, you're using probably a third of what you'd use in regular cod liver oil.
Okay.
So you mentioned grass-fed beef and free-range eggs.
Salmon, right? Sardines are wonderful, and if people like sardines, I encourage them to eat them every day, because there's virtually no mercury in sardines, so it's one of the perfect fish to eat. And same with wild-caught salmon. I mean, there's very, very low mercury levels in them too, so, you know, if they can...
How much fish can especially pregnant women eat, in your mind?
In my mind, it's such a misconception, but I think of the Japanese, and I think of Japanese women eating fish every day. So really, I mean, I think pregnant women are safe eating it three, four times a week if they really want to, as long as they're eating high quality fish. So yeah, I don't see any reason why, you know, I'm sure you kind of feel the same way. It's like, why should we limit that if it's, you know, good fish, you know, and it's good for us.
Well, right. And then I don't know if you've heard Chris Kresser speak about the selenium in fish acts like a mercury magnet. So unless you're eating those gargantuan fish, as long as the fish has more selenium than mercury, you're golden. And there's only a few fish most of us aren't eating anyway. So, if you go on his website, chriskresser.com, you can look up that article on selenium. So that, along with what you said about the Japanese, made me feel really confident in saying, do not worry about the mercury if you're sticking with the fish that we recommend that are wild-caught, you know, salmon and sardines for sure, because you know, all of us, especially pregnant women, need to eat fish, and you can find ways to like it. So let's say, like me, I used to hate fish, and so what do you do with a person who hates fish? How do you get them to think, even think about a sardine? They're not, you know, fun to look at.
That is a great question. And actually, okay, so I teach a lot of our classes. That's like my favorite thing to do. And I, for our weight and wellness series, that's our six-week series, I bring in sardines for everybody to try. But I do it in a way where people actually don't know it's sardines. So I take a can. I usually just get the olive oil-based one. And I mix it with a little, you know, safflower mayonnaise. And then I add a little bit of, you know, sweet pickle relish from Trader Joe's. And they have no clue it's sardines. They think it's tuna. And then I tell them that it's sardines, and they're like, what? So that's part of the way I get people to eat more sardines. Another way, especially people who don't like salmon because it's a, you know, it's a stronger fish, I have them try just to make our salmon cakes. We have a great recipe for salmon cakes, and it's gluten-free. It uses wild rice instead of breadcrumbs. And so, and it uses canned salmon, so it's a little bit more economical. And people love salmon cakes. They taste basically like crab cakes, and they're super good, and they're filling. So that's one way I get people to eat fish.
Good.
Or I have them, I sometimes have them make it like a fish stew, and usually that's more white fish. But, you know, whatever way you can get them to eat fish is, you know, if they don't like it, so...
Now, you mentioned your salmon cake recipe. That's on the website nutritionalweightandwellness.com. You have a recipe section with, you know, some good recipes. But do you have a cookbook that you all recommend or that you use personally that's a real food cookbook people could pick up?
Yes. One of them is, it's called our Dishing Up Nutrition Guide. That's one we sell. And then there's a couple other ones. I love Nourishing Traditions, which is a wonderful, it's a nutrition resource plus a cookbook. That one was written by Sally Fallon. You know, probably know that one. And then, and Mary Enig too, I'm pretty sure. I think they're co-authored. And then there's one called the Schwarzbein Principle Cookbook. Have you ever heard of that one?
Yeah, I love her stuff too.
She's awesome.
The name of the book that started it all, the Schwarzbein Principle, and I bring it to class, I'm like, I know this name is a terrible name for a book, but it's a phenomenally easy reading book. Where you just won't put it down, and it's convinced these, you know, I have some, and you probably do too, where the wife will come to the class and then try to tell the husband, you're doing it all wrong. You need to eat butter, and you need to eat, you know, grass-fed beef. And so one wife gave her husband a copy of the Schwarzbein Principle, and then all of a sudden the husband's like, did you know we should be eating fat? And if I want my cholesterol down? And so sometimes, you know, our family members need to hear it from a source like that, because Diana Schwarzbein's an MD. And so you're talking about the cookbook that also goes along with that.
Yes, exactly. It's easy to read. Like that book is so easy for people to understand. And that's why I love that book. But the cookbook's great too, because it's got awesome recipes, and like you said, they're balanced, and they're real foods. So.
And I'm gonna say a shout. Oh, I was just gonna give a shout out to a friend of mine here who does a cooking blog that's all grain free and dairy free, and so it's Kelsey's Creations with K's, K-E-L-C-I-E. Kelsey's, Creations with a K, creations.blogspot.com. And it's really incredible, because Kelsey healed herself. She's 17 and had backed herself into one of those corners of eating five foods because everything hurt and made her sick. And she and her mother figured out, and this is on my podcast a few weeks ago, her story, but they figured out it was, you know, food sensitivities, and so she went on to heal her gut, and now she, you know, does these recipes. So that, and with pictures, and just the fact that she's 17 makes everybody feel like, all right, if a 17-year-old can learn how to do this, I can learn how to do this.
That's right. That's awesome. I'm going to go. I'm going to go on her blog. That's awesome.
Yeah, because she's taken over the cooking for the family and has younger siblings who want, you know, chicken nuggets. So she has a recipe using almond flour and, you know, so no grains. And let's talk about grains since we're going there. What's the recommendation?
Well, I would say grains are so inflammatory, you know, especially the gluten ones. I just, you know, if they have, if, you know, a pregnant woman or anyone, if they have intestinal issues already, you know, even before their baby is born, I really encourage them to not eat gluten, because chances are they're going to, their baby's going to have problems digesting it if they already do. So, and this, I'll go into my story. This is about my son, and this is really when I started going gluten-free. So when he was 4 months old, I started having problems, you know, with enough supply of breast milk, and so I had to supplement a little bit. And all of a sudden, he had a terrible reaction. He had eczema all over his body. And up to that point, he had been fine. And so I called my midwife right away, and she's like, definitely do not give him any type of formula. So I started diluting a little bit of real good canned coconut milk with a little water, and that's how I supplemented. But anyway, back to the grain story, I basically had to do an elimination diet with him, and I first cut out the gluten and the dairy, and that didn't seem, I mean, it helped, but it didn't seem to get rid of the eczema. So then I had to go egg-free, which I love eggs, and I gave up my chocolate, which is really hard for me too. And within a month of giving up all four of those things, his skin was totally cleared up. So that was an indication to me that, wow, I really do have problems with gluten. I should have never been eating it for this long. And so I've stayed off it since then, and I feel so much better. And I know that's when I started losing some weight, some of my baby weight. So it's really powerful. And people are like, well, how can, you know, your baby react to your, you know, the things you're eating in your breast milk? It's like, because they feel that same sensitivity in their body, because your body's reacting to it. And that's really what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, but that's
so
my,
you have, your son, Luke, is he still gluten, dairy, egg, and chocolate free?
No, thank God.
Good.
He handles eggs now. if he does have dairy, he still reacts to dairy, so I really try to keep him off the dairy, and you can notice it right away on his cheek. That's where it starts. So he's virtually dairy free. He does every once in a while. We cook with butter, so he handles butter, and he handles a little bit of cream, but mostly dairy free. Gluten he hardly ever gets, but that's another thing that he still reacts to. So I really, as long as he's eating at my house and I can control everything, he's gluten-free too. So, yeah.
So the dairy, do you think it's lactose or do you think it's casein or both?
I think it's casein, because he never had, like, the intestinal issues. Like, he never was gassy, you know. You know how they, you know, the babies, they curl up when they're in pain. He never did that.
Mm-hmm.
It was definitely more the skin inflammation. But I think it was more casein than anything. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, and I mentioned this with Dar, and I know this isn't, Minnesota information. So, but Google this, the devil in the milk. Maybe you've come across this, but the casein that we have here in America is beta casein A1, and that's the one everybody's reacting to. And we need beta casein A2, which is impossible to find unless you happen to have, access to African and Indian cows. But then I just mentioned that you can get that from Beyond Organic, and I access that because of my clients who are sensitive to dairy. I wanted that. And so you can go to my website to get to that, or you can go right to Suero, SUERO, .mybeyondorganic.com. So that is, you know, just a resource there for A2 casein, raw cheese, fermented cultured dairy. It's like a drinkable yogurt, cheese curds, okay. You know, cheese crackers.
Oh, my gosh.
So it's good for people with the casein deal. The lactose can't help you there. But
yeah, so that wouldn't help me, but because I think I react to both. But
okay.
That's awesome
right.
to know. Okay, because I think when you were talking, I was listening to the podcast with Dar. I think you mentioned that too, the A2 casein. Okay, that is awesome.
Yeah.
See, I love it.
It's not common knowledge. And it's something we need to know that, you know, is out there. So there's an article and even a book called The Devil in the Milk. So we're not eating gluten. That's just bad, bad, bad. What do you tell people who say, but I have to have my rice or my quinoa? You know, are there any that we can have? And what's the quantity and things like that?
Yeah, so I don't mind some of the other, you know, gluten-free grains. Like, I like wild rice. I usually have most of my clients do wild rice as long as they don't react to it, which most people don't. So, and I like, I'm okay with brown rice as long as it's a half a cup. That's a good serving to stick with. Quinoa's great as well. I like to use that in several different things. I usually put it in soup, or I use it as... if people are used to eating oatmeal and they really don't handle oats at all anymore, even gluten-free oats, I have them do a quinoa hot cereal in the morning. But that's, again, about a half a cup, especially if they've got weight issues and they're trying to keep blood sugars down. I definitely, half a cup is a good standard, and that's cooked. So the other one.
Okay, and that's not very much food, so they must be trying to eat something else.
Yeah, so usually, like, if they want that, like, if they want quinoa or they want some gluten-free grain, I, you know, say half a cup of quinoa, or if they want to do a half a sweet potato, that's fine too. And then I'd have them do some type of protein, which it would be, you know, two eggs, or we have a great turkey sausage, breakfast sausage recipe. Sometimes I have my clients do chili in the morning. You know, we have to get away from this breakfast food syndrome. That's what I like to call it.
Right.
You know, in America, mm-hmm. we think, you know, cereal and oatmeal and, you know, bacon and eggs, that's the only thing you can eat in the morning, but it's really not. So,
mm-hmm.
yeah. But
so
the,
what
I mean,
did
so,
you, sorry, what did you have for breakfast today, if this was a normal
morning?
Day?
Great question. Okay, so this is one of my favorite breakfasts. I probably have this. At least two or three times a week, I sautéed up kale in coconut oil, and then I threw some chorizo sausage from the farmer's market in there. And for those of you who don't know what chorizo is, it's a really good Spanish spices in, like, a pork sausage. So,
okay.
And then I threw my two eggs in there. So, and my favorite cheese, which I can handle because it's from sheep milk.
Good.
And it's a sheep's milk feta from Trader Joe's. It actually comes from Israel. I'm trying to think. I think it's Pastures of Eden. I think that's the name, the brand. But it's delicious. So I handle that fine. So, yeah, I sautéed that up, and that was my breakfast. So.
Okay. So people who aren't used to kale... You know, when you cook it in oil, it's completely different. So you've got to give it a try. Kale chips, you know, kale sautéed. If you think you're eating kale, like, with lettuce, you know, in a salad, it's not the way. You got to fix it with a little olive oil.
Yeah. Have you, I was going to ask, have you ever eaten it raw? I've never tried it raw.
If you do, yeah, I did, and yuck. But if you rub the leaves with olive oil, it does something to it. It changes it. It breaks something down that's nasty in there and makes it delicious. So that's the way to go if you want to eat it raw.
It.
Or putting
it
in a smoothie.
Helps
it. Or putting it in a smoothie, it also breaks it down, and then you have other fats and things in the smoothie, like coconut milk or avocado to improve it too.
Right, exactly.
So why are we trying to get our pregnant ladies to eat these dark green leafies like kale?
Why or how or what? Sorry, I missed the first
part. We'll start with why. Why are we, you know, focusing on these vegetables that are a little bit challenging?
Challenging to eat? mostly because they are power-packed with antioxidants, with crucial minerals such as selenium and magnesium, things like that, that our bodies a lot of times can become fairly deficient in, but also very, very rich in vitamins, B vitamins and things like that that give us energy, that are good for our heart and our brains. And the fact that, you know, you can eat so much and with so little effect on blood sugars. And, you know, let's face it, a lot of people are dealing with that, and especially gestational diabetes has gone up steadily in the past even 10 years. So, you know, the rise of gestational diabetes. So I think it's really important that we eat more of the green leafies because, again, of the nutritional quality of them, you know, especially the antioxidants, but also, you know, just because we don't eat enough vegetables in our society. So it's an easy way to, you know, because they take like 1 or 2 minutes to saute, and then you throw your eggs on and you've got breakfast in 5 minutes. So it's very easy to, you know, incorporate, even though we don't like eating them sometimes.
And what's the quantity we should focus on trying to get in terms of vegetables per day?
Per day, we say at Nutritional and Wellness, 3 cups is fine, but 5 cups is divine. So if you can focus on 3 cups a day and then kind of go up to 5, that's great. That's like 1 cup a meal. Usually, you know, we encourage our clients and our students to try to get 5 cups a day of real, you know, light veggies. So.
Yeah, and if you're not putting them in your breakfast, you don't want to be at dinner time trying to eat 5 cups of vegetables.
No, that's a lot. You probably won't be able to do that. That's a lot of veggies, yeah. So, I mean, you know, 1 cup per meal or 1.5 cups, and that'll get you up there. So, yeah. And even at it's easy to get celery and peanut butter in at a snack, and, you know, even carrots and hummus, that's a great way too. So, yeah.
So you were talking about, you know, balancing blood sugar, and, you know, let's talk about that for a minute. How are we constructing our meals to balance our blood sugar, and what kind of foods are going to cause us problems?
Okay, so the best way to, you know, to keep your blood sugar balanced is going to be incorporating all three of the core nutrients, the three big ones we call them, you know, proteins, fats, and carbs. So every time you eat, you want to eat, you know, between 2 and 4, this is for women, but between 2 and 4 ounces of protein. And then you want to have at least a cup of vegetables in there, preferably the lighter ones, so, you know, green beans, broccoli, Brussels sprouts, and then a good tablespoon of fat to kind of balance everything out. And you can add, you know, like, a starchy vegetable in there if you want, like a half a sweet potato, or, you know, like I mentioned before, the half a cup of quinoa, or a piece of fruit. But if you've got really sensitive blood sugars and you handle, you know, a meal without those starchy things, then I would say, you know, kind of maybe cut those out for a little bit, or don't eat them at every meal, you know. But the things you really want to avoid, we kind of talked about this before, grains, especially grains from the gluten grains, wheat and rye and any type of bread is really going to spike the blood sugar. So those are really things you want to kind of cut out or really minimalize in your diet, because they break down into sugar quite quickly, and then they're also inflammatory, so it causes all kinds of problems in the cell. But then also, like, anything that's going to, like, anything like popcorn, which we think is a diet food, it's high in fiber, that can definitely spike the blood sugar. Ice cream is a huge one as well. You know, crackers, cookies, chips. Chips are huge, even though they don't taste sweet. They're definitely going to spike the blood sugar. They're all carbs. You know, any type of cold cereal, very, very bad cold cereal is, you know, and they come out with a new one every day. So,
right.
You know, that's the, you know, or any cereal bars. I mean, they are loaded with sugar and there's barely any fiber in them. So there's nothing to really kind of counteract that sugar. Those are, I mean, that's and even too much fruit at one time can spike your blood sugar. So you want to be careful with fruit. Fruit's wonderful for you, but never eat it by itself. That's why I always tell all my clients, you know, always eat some protein or at least some fat with fruit. Otherwise, it's really going to give you a blood sugar spike.
And people don't realize that they may be having blood sugar issues, and I, you know, I'm raising my hand here, that I ate whatever I wanted for 40 years because I really didn't battle the weight thing, and so I thought I could eat, you know, several fudge sickles after I worked out and that, you know, Snicker bar every day and hide the box of Girl Scout cookies in my glove box so I wouldn't have to share it. I mean, I was, you know, addicted, but I didn't think it mattered because I thought, you know, as soon as I start gaining weight, I'll just cut this out. You know, it's so simple in my head. But then, you know, I started eating better, of course, you know, in the last 10 or so years when I got into nutrition. But I was doing a research paper on reversing diabetes with nutrition and working on how to test the blood sugar, you know, like 1 hour after a meal, 2 hours after a meal, to see really how you are handling whatever it is you're eating, because nobody can really tell somebody what to eat. So anyway, I'm like practicing. I read Wheat Belly, and you know, Dr. Davis says, oh, 2 pieces of a whole wheat bread will raise your blood sugar faster than a couple spoonfuls of sugar. And I just thought, well, no, that can't be true. So I tested my blood sugar, and it went sky-high diabetic level, and I was in denial for a while, so that is just how you don't know what's going on with your blood sugar. And we're told to eat a diet according to a food pyramid, which is actually the diet that will get you diabetes and overweight. So the things we're talking about that Anna's telling us are based on science and not on the dollar bill and subsidized grains that are genetically modified. Uh-oh, get me off my soapbox.
We love it, Erin. I love it.
All right, I'm calming down.
True.
Well, let's talk about some of those depleting foods to avoid, because some of the things you mentioned, ice cream and popcorn and crackers, are like staples in many diets of pregnant women. And some of it has to do with cravings. you know, why are we telling them they can't have these things they're craving? Or, you know, what they're doing is harming their bodies and their babies. But what, you know, besides the blood sugar roller coaster, what else are we finding in cookies, chips, and crackers and ice cream that we want to avoid?
The big one, besides obviously the sugar, is the trans fats that's found in most of those products. And, you know, I throw trans fats out loosely, but you have to look at the ingredients on things. So if something says partially hydrogenated oil or, you know, fully hydrogenated oil, that's basically a trans fat. And those things are going to cause severe problems in your cell, in your baby. What they do is they form this crust, so around your cell wall, and that actually blocks glucose, or, you know, simple sugar, from getting into the cell so you can use it as energy. So what it's doing is it's causing more insulin resistance, or what we call, like, basically prediabetes, because all this sugar now, you know, insulin is no longer able to push it through into the cell, and so it's all, you know, roaming around in the bloodstream, and insulin is, you know, a storing hormone, and so insulin says, well, I got to get this out of the bloodstream, so it just stores it in your fat cells. But the problem is, when you're pregnant, that's not only happening to you, it's happening to your baby. Your baby becomes very sensitive to sugar at that, you know, that fetal stage, and they're going to have so many problems as a child, as an adult, with sugar. That makes them so much more insulin insulin resistant as a child than they would have been if you would have eaten the kale and eggs and the sweet potatoes and steak and things like that. So, you know, it's long-term problems that these terrible trans fats cause, and that's why it's really important to stay away from those, you know, products that are going to spike the blood sugar, because they're going to have the trans fats in them as well.
Did I
explain that okay?
yes, perfect. And just, you know, every time I look at this factory food, I see it just declining, and our food supply is getting worse and worse by the day. And You know, as far as artificial sweeteners and just these chemicals they're putting in things,
and
you know,
preservatives.
Yes.
I have to tell you. To tell you this. Okay, so this was actually came from one of my students in one of my classes, and she was talking about you know, when grave sites get really full and they have to dig up bones and then they, you know, to shift them around to make, you know, to make room for other people, headstones.
Lovely,
anyway,
yeah.
They're lovely, right? Great job. But they were finding that the bones, even of these people who are, you know, have been there for 40, 30 years, were not disintegrating. Like, they weren't turning into earth again. They were not, you know, because of all the preservatives in our food.
Wow.
And I just
thought
that was so nasty. I was like, oh my gosh. So anyway, I mean, that's how processed our environment, our foods have become.
Right. You know, we've been talking about all of this, but this isn't nutrition for the day you find out you're pregnant. If you're even thinking about you know, starting a family, how soon do we really need to get on board and get off the standard American diet if we're even thinking about getting pregnant?
Well, when couples come in and they, you know, they're like, we want to get healthy, we want to, you know, get pregnant, I tell them, don't even start trying for 6 months, because that's at least how long it's going to take you to get into a habit of eating better, but also so you can heal, you know, your cells. So you're as healthy as you can be before that baby is conceived. So that's, I mean, and that's through research too. I'm not just pulling that out of my, you know, my bottom. That, you know, they, you know, African cultures do that. You know, they eat certain foods for, you know, 4 to 6 months prior to conceiving, so that they're really healthy, so that they can support that baby. And so the baby is as healthy as it can be when you know, it's born. And so that's really what they're seeing is, you know, 4 to 6 months of eating a really healthy, nourishing diet. And that's what's going to prepare you the best to have a healthy baby. So
right. And so to underscore what you said before, it's not a low-fat diet. Don't do that thinking this is a strategy to keep your weight low. Eating low-fat will actually make you gain weight. And I know it's counterintuitive, and for your whole life you've been beat over the head with the food pyramid, but it's not based on science. So
no, it's not.
We know it works, right?
Yes. And even if you Gary Tobbs, he states this in his both books, like, you know, before 1950, we ate, you know, a moderately high-fat diet, and we didn't have all these problems, and people weren't obese, you know, and if they were, they tended to eat very high sugar diets anyway. So again, they knew to cut out starches when they needed to lose weight, you know? I mean, it's just common sense, but
In getting ready for this show, I stumbled across some studies for people thinking about getting pregnant, and you know, we're talking about the man too here. This isn't one-person pregnancy, but there were a couple studies in the lead scientist is out of Harvard, and his name is Jorge Chavarro. I'm sure I'm messing that up. But he, there's a study that he was part of that said women who eat lots of low-fat dairy products or just low-fat foods, you know, face 85% higher risk of ovulatory infertility than women who eat little or no. So that's, you know, one study was saying, you know, you're going to have more problems with fertility if you're eating low fat and fat free. But for men, you know, their sperm count goes down when they drink soda. I don't know if it was the caffeine or the high fructose corn syrup. But the other thing, you know, you haven't told us to eat corn. Why is that?
Well, up here in Minnesota, it's really hard to find good sweet corn. I love sweet corn. I'm a Minnesota girl through and through, but, I mean, I don't buy it unless it comes from the farmer's market and it's organic, because all corn is almost all of it is genetically modified, and I just don't trust what that stuff does to us. And it's not a digestible food. I mean, you know, if you eat corn, you can see where it, you know, you can see it. It's totally non-digested. So I think it's very hard for us to even, you know, digest it. I doubt we're getting much nutrients from it anyway because of how genetically modified it is. So, I mean, and I know a lot of my clients have had problems with corn. So I just, you know, if you do eat corn, I would say make sure it's organic, you know. But, again, it's not a super nutritious food. So that's something, you know, that I'm not exactly thrilled to tell my clients to eat.
So. Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's not a vegetable. It's a grain.
No.
And grain, it's used to fatten up the farm animals, and it does the same thing to us besides being GMO, like you say. I think if you got, you know, an organic corn and you wanted to have, you know, 4th of July, you know, go all for it. Just make sure you're eating your grass-fed beef and butter
so that it
slows down. But also there are some people that are getting organic corn and sprouting it, and that makes it more digestible too. But that's not, you know, super easy to find. But another thing that I found related to corn, you know, America's cornfields are not just GMO. They're also loaded with pesticides.
Yeah.
And one pesticide, atrazine, is an endocrine disruptor. So male corn farmers who work with this atrazine and other pesticides have lower sperm counts too. So there's just, you know, a real, real strong argument here for only organic corn. It's just not worth it. But unfortunately, all those processed foods, that's a staple in all of them. It's either soy or corn on every package because it's cheap.
Yes, very cheap. And it's subsidized. Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, it's something that, I mean, and you mentioned soy. I mean, soy is an endocrine disruptor, too. And it lowers the thyroid, you know, and it just raises estrogen levels. So that can, I think that's a huge issue, too, is that, you know, we have all these guys walking around with high estrogen levels. That's not good for sperm count, you know, or any fertility issues. So, I mean, and women, you know, we have too high estrogen. I mean, obviously, you take the birth control pill for 20 years before you try to get pregnant, and then you've got all these soy-based products in your diet. That's going to make for a very hard, difficult time to get pregnant. And I say it wholeheartedly because I have a lot of clients who are trying to get pregnant, and they have a lot of healing to do before they probably will because of all the processed things they have eaten and just all the hormones that are in their body that are, you know, preventing them from conceiving. So, you know, it's a huge problem today.
Yeah, the soy is has a halo on it, and it should have a devil's pitchfork.
It should.
Because
like,
of all the things you said, besides it being genetically modified, and it's a, you know, vegan, vegetarian staple. So what, you know, what do you do if a person comes in your office who is, let's say, vegan even and wants to get pregnant? You know, we're not trying to tell somebody who has a philosophical thing, you know, with the animals, how to feel and think. But if you're doing it because you believe this is healthier, that's a different kind of education. So how would you, you know, educate that person?
So I would strongly advise them, you know, I'd tell them, you know, that it's not healthier because, again, soy increases estrogen, and estrogen can make a lot of issues in the body, and it lowers progesterone. So the higher estrogen you have, the lower your progesterone starts to fall, and you need healthy progesterone levels to actually conceive. But then also soy is much harder to digest, and so it can cause a lot of intestinal issues with the gas and bloating, and with all the genetically modified organisms in it, it probably even makes it even more hard to digest because our body's not used to that type of or form of soy. It's the same thing with wheat nowadays. And so not only is it causing problems in the gut, but it's causing your thyroid to slow down, even if you don't have thyroid problems, and it's causing all this excess estrogen. So if you're, you know, you're actually better off eating like healthy grass-fed meat or free-range chicken and eggs than you are eating all of this processed soy. And that's, again, that's how I'd educate somebody if they were willing to eat meat. If they weren't, I would tell them they need to either be eating mostly tempeh, organic tempeh, which, you know, is a fermented soy, or, you know, trying to get miso in, you know, in a chicken broth or something like that that is a fermented form that has some probiotics, you know, because otherwise they're going to have a very hard time, you know, getting that estrogen progesterone balance back in order. And so that's one thing that I would suggest, you know, that they do if they think it's a healthier lifestyle rather than, you know, a philosophical, you know, I don't want to
eat.
Right.
So we have just a few minutes left. Can you mention some supplements that you would recommend? Because we, you know, we just aren't able to get all the nutrients from our food. It's not always grown the best. We can't always afford the perfect, you know, diet. So what should we be doing as far as supplements?
Okay, so you want to make sure that you're getting, definitely DHA. If you can get some good fermented cod liver oil or just a regular cod liver oil, that would be good. But like one or two teaspoons, so it depends. If you get like a fermented cod liver oil, one teaspoon's fine. And then 400 to 600 milligrams of DHA. For prenatal, you definitely want to, you know, get one that has minerals and vitamins. And like when I say minerals, I mean like calcium citrate and magnesium glycinate, good forms of those minerals. Otherwise, you're not. It's going to make it really hard to digest and absorb any of them. But usually I tell clients that are pregnant to get one with high B vitamins because that'll help with their energy levels, but also it's going to have a higher level of folate that they need, so the folic acid. What's the other one? I mean, probiotics, definitely. Usually we tend to tell people about bifidobacteria because that's the one that's in breast milk, so that their babies are going to get it when they nurse. But also it's going to help the woman with digestion and making sure that her body's absorbing nutrients so the baby gets it.
Right.
You know, so I mean those are the big ones that I would say is, you know, a good probiotic with bifidobacteria in it, the DHA, a good multivitamin with minerals, and the cod liver oil. You know, especially if they're on a budget, you can't always, you know, supplement with everything that you make.
Yeah.
Those are the big ones, yeah.
Now, if you're, you know, going to the doctor, they'll probably give you a prescription prenatal multi.
Yes.
And we don't think, I have a feeling, we don't think this is better than what you can get on your own. Every time I look at them, I'm like, no, that's a junk form of the vitamin.
Junk.
You're not even absorbing that. So
and, yeah,
tell me your,
like,
you know, go ahead.
Yeah. The one I like the best is, it's called Femme Prenatal, and it's actually a product by Nutrition Dynamics. I love that one. It's in packets, so basically you take one packet a day, and it's, you can split it up if you want. There's the multivitamin, and then there's like the magnesium and the multimineral as well. And it still has iron. If they don't handle tablets, because they're all tablets, I usually have people take our twice a day multivitamin. That's the one I took because I am terrible at swallowing tablets, and they'd almost make me nauseous because I had morning sickness. So I took our twice a day, and that was fine because that one has really high B vitamins in it. There's a couple other good ones out there that you can find at the co-op, but those definitely, the Femme Prenatal, if you can find that one or you can order it online from Nutrition Dynamics, that is one of the best I've seen, and people tend to tolerate that one very well. Again, and it's a packet, so it's like everything you need, you know, for the day.
Yeah, sometimes we just need something that's easier.
Easy.
To get everything.
Yeah.
And you can't really have one a day because the minerals are so bulky, it doesn't all fit in one. So
right.
You are going to end up with a packet or a couple of, you know, capsules or tablets a day. So for nausea, you mentioned the bees, you know, helped you, right?
Yes, the vitamin B6 was very helpful, but even B3 has helped which is niacin, so that can help. But B6 definitely. And usually I would take like 100 milligrams right away when I got up. And sometimes I'd take like half a one or another 100 milligrams later on in the day. But that really helped me. Also, this is the main thing, and this isn't even a supplement. This is totally how you eat. If you can eat every hour and a half, 2 hours, even if it's just a small amount with, you know, the balance of it all, of proteins, fats, and carbs, that's what really helped me with my morning sickness. If I went too long without eating something and my stomach got empty, that's when my nausea was the worst. And so I found, you know, eating every hour and a half or 2 hours much, much more doable,
okay.
And I could manage the nausea, so...
Great.
Yeah, and ginger, too. Ginger is huge for a lot of people.
Right, yes. Ginger tea, you know, would be something
yes.
that's easy to have
yes.
If you're not feeling well.
Yes.
Okay, well, Anna Durhack, thank you for joining me today. It's been great. We covered a lot of ground. I know there's much more, but we just had an hour. So this
yes,
is just to
right.
maybe give some basics here, but... Tell us again how people can get in touch with you, and do you do long-distance consultations?
Yes, I do. If you want to email me or just, you know, have a short little consult to see if, you know, we're the right fit, my email is Anna, A-N-N-A, at weightandwellness.com. And I do Skype appointments. I do phone consults. If you're ever in the area, you can always come up and see me in the Maple Grove office. And if you have a general question, you can email it to our general email, and it's just email@weightandwellness.com, and one of us will be able to get back to you. But that's kind of how you can reach me. So I'd love to hear from you.
Great. Well, thank you so much. And I will, you know, send you a link to this show, but I appreciate all of your... you know, wisdom and your time sharing everything with us this morning. So have a great day.
Thanks,
Anna.
Sharon. You too. Bye.
Okay, take care. Bye.
Yep, bye.
All right, everybody, that was Anna Durhack, and you can visit her website, weightandwellness.com, my website, getbetterwellness.com. We have another show this week on Thursday with Polly Halstead. And she is a chef from Napa who has a new paleo cookbook that we will talk with her about the principles and some of the great recipes. And that will be at 10 a.m. Central Time. So please check out my website, getbetterwellness.com. If you're interested in the A2 hypoallergenic casein dairy, raw cheese, cultured dairy, that's Suero, suero.mybeyondorganic.com. Thanks for listening.